Huzzah, and welcome to Knights of the Hardcover, a podcast dedicated to discussing and summarizing fantasy book, their lore, and all of the things we love about them. My name is Brandon Castle, your shaman of the West Coast, and joining me today on this trip to enlightenment, he just got back from his first hallucinogenic backpacking vision quest, it's Chris Lauer.
Hey, you know, I was just going to say, I just got done smoking about a pound of opium, so I'm ready to go to the Pantheon with you guys.
Perfect. We were aligned on our intros there. That worked out. That's true enlightenment with your friends. And also joining us today, he claims he smells of pig only because of a school assignment. It's Zach Misick.
You know, I didn't smoke anything before this, but I did eat a couple poppy seed muffins. So I think I'm good.
All right. Sounds like everyone is drugged up and fueled for this podcast. We are not a pro drug podcast except for today, because we're shamans trying to reach enlightenment, because today we are covering the 2018 fantasy novel The Poppy War by R.F. Kuang. Man, reading this book, all I could think about is how much I was looking forward to Zach mispronouncing all of the names of this book. I can't fucking wait to get through some of this, baby.
Yeah, get ready for it. I even listened to this book, and I'm still going to get all the names wrong.
I for one, am very excited about it, so we'll look forward to that. But first, we're going to start off with a quick summary. This one's not so quick. There's a lot that happens in this book, but so Chris and I are going to alternate this time, but we'll start things off. Fang Ruin, also known as Rin, is a war orphan that was given to opium dealers in the small farming village of Takong after the Second Opium War. Rin decides that she wants to take the Keju, an entrance exam taken all across the country to get into prestigious academies. With the help of a tutor, Rin gets the top score and is admitted into the best military academy, Sinigard. There, she's immediately looked down upon by other students for her status as a farm girl, and gets into a fight with Yin Niza, an important heir to the Dragon Warlords. At the beginning, they are taught, at the academy, they are taught a form of fighting that uses your inner spirit called Ki, allowing the fighter to have extraordinary strength. Alton, a Spear Lee, is the best fighter in the school, as he demonstrates in the state-sponsored fight clubs. To prove her own strength, Rin and Niza duel. She gets her ass kicked and is banned from training martial arts by the Master Jun. After destroying her uterus to not have a period, Rin becomes top of class in most subjects, along with her new friend Kitsei. On the side, she teaches herself martial arts in the library with old texts. The eccentric lore master Jiang sees her training and offers to help teach her. After recently reading the book Holes, Jiang has Rin carry a piglet to the top of a mountain every day to build her strength. Jiang wants her to pledge lore so he could teach her how to communicate with the gods and become a shaman.
At the end of the semester, tests come with the final fighting test called the tournament. Niza and Rin make it to the final of the fighting tournament, and Rin wins, becoming a fighting monster in the ring, losing control. After summer break at Keats's house, Rin decides to pledge lore with Master Jiang. He confirms that she called on a god in the tournament, and she is his first student since Alton, who the Empress made drop lore and become a soldier. Rin and Jiang go backpacking so Jiang can do drugs and communicate with the gods. Then Rin goes on her own drug journey for weeks in the mountains and finds enlightenment, confronted with the Phoenix God. Tensions between Mugen and Nikara, their countries, get worse, so many students leave the academy, including Alton, who becomes the commander of the Sykes, a ragtag group called the Bizarre Children, basically the X-Men. Mugen invade Nikara, and Sinigard becomes a target for attack. The Phoenix is trying to convince Rin to use his powers to the fullest, but Jiang once warns that using gods in war is dangerous, as the power is corrupting and destructive. Rin steals some poppy seeds and joins the war effort. The Federation destroys Sinigard, but before victory, Rin calls the Phoenix and kills the Federation general. Jiang calls the gods and disappears into a portal. Niza is stabbed through the heart by the general before Rin gets to him. Rin wakes up the Empress and is assigned to the Sykes under Alton. The Sykes are all shamans with their own unique powers. We learn that Rin is actually from Spear, an old country of shamans completely destroyed by the Federation in the Second Poppy War, just like Alton. Jiang is an ancient shaman from stories called the Gatekeeper.
Alton helps Rin control the Phoenix, and they head to Kertalane City to help with the defenses. Rin meets the other Sykes, who are for the most part drug-addicted powerful shamans. The Sykes plan a raid on Federation ships, which is very successful. After big losses from the raid, the Federation sends an envoy to surrender, which is actually a Trojan horse for a suicide bomb that devastates the city and its civilians. The Sykes turn to guerrilla warfare to turn back the tide of the war, and reinforcements from the Dragon Warlord arrive, with Nisa somehow completely healed already. Rin can't call the Phoenix anymore, and Alton is completely losing his mind from all of the losses. Nisa and Rin become friends and fight a Chimai that is released in the city. The Federation unleashes mustard gas attacks on the Nikaran people, and Nisa is taken captive. Shagan, the Psych Lieutenant, takes Rin to the spirit world to help recall the Phoenix. They meet the goddess of hexagrams that shows them glimpses to the future. They see that the Federation is attacking the war capital of Golan Nis, so the Sykes head there to defend the city. They arrive to an absolute massacre of all the civilians, soldiers, and people of the city. The Federation had tortured and raped everyone. They find a few survivors there, including Kitse, but Alton snaps, revealing he is addicted to opium, and tells them his plan to unleash all the shamans under the Kikanin mountain range, locked there because they lost control of themselves to the gods. Rin and Alton enter the mountain prison, talk to Jiang, who is locked there, and release a powerful shaman Phelan of the world. Realizing this was a mistake, they aim to leave, but are captured by Federation soldiers waiting outside.
Rin and Alton wake up in a facility that Alton was experimented on as a child by Dr. Shiro. He reveals the Mugen plan to unleash the plague in all the large cities of Nikara, and that the Empress of Nikara sold out their location at the mountain. Alton and Rin are drugged, which lets them access the spirit world, and they go back in time to Ancient Spear to meet their ancestors. Rin uses her anger to break out of the facility. Alton sacrifices himself to give Rin more time to escape. Rin swims to the Island of Spear, goes to the Temple of the Phoenix, becomes his avatar, and kills all the people living in Mugen in one foul swoop. She wakes up on a boat with the Sykes and Kitse, who are disgusted with what she did. She learns that two of the other Sykes were on a secret mission to break a dam in Nikara, killing thousands of innocent villagers and Mugen soldiers. Rin seeks to go after the Empress and the Shaman Phelan. Before dying, Alton named Rin commander of the Sykes, and Shagan agrees to help her on her quest.
Nice. That was a long one. Thank you for splitting that with me, Chris.
Good job, guys.
I feel like our summary was almost as long as the actual book itself, but there it is.
Yeah.
All right. Well, since we did the summary, Zach, let's get your thoughts and ratings of the book.
I really like this book. I think on Goodreads, I gave it 3 out of 5 stars. I think if I had to like stretch it out and like a 10 star rating, I think I would give it maybe like 6.5, 7 stars. I think some like the things that I really did like, I liked the beginning of the book when she was in the academy. I like how there wasn't any like romance or wasn't too like heavily relied upon for this type of book. I thought it did a really good job with kind of like the complex issues, like nationalism, colorism, that kind of stuff. And it really showed the brutality of war. But there was like a lot of things I didn't quite like. I felt like it was two totally different books. The first book being like very like standard YAE and the other one being like an adult fiction book. It didn't seem like it went well. I felt like the magic system was very unclear for me. That was a very loose one. And I felt like the characters were pretty like one dimensional surface level. I never really knew what anyone's like motivations were. They're kind of caricatures. As soon as you got to kind of learn a set of characters, like totally got replaced by the people in the army. So I never really felt like I got an attachment to any of the characters. But like I said, that being said, I enjoyed reading it, but there were just a couple issues like that I had, but it was good.
Okay. Chris, what'd you think? You agree with that?
I thought it was really good. I think I gave it 5 stars on Goodreads, if I remember right. I'd probably throw like an 8.5 out of 10 on there. I'm a little less discriminating when it goes to throwing out fives on Goodreads than I would be to give like a 10 out of 10 to a book. But it really I just wanted to keep reading it. Like once I started it, I was really enthralled by it and I wanted to finish it. And that's really kind of like my base bar to say that I really liked a book. Like if I'm thinking about it when I'm not reading it and I want to go back to it, then that's a book that I really like. And this one definitely accomplished that for me. The beginning, like Zach said, is a little more YAE, which isn't a bad thing. But I did look up the publishing date, because the beginning of this book is so similar to like the beginning of Kingkiller Chronicle, especially with like Jiang and
The Jiang Elden. Part. Like, I can't remember. Yeah, Elden.
It was eerily similar. Not saying that anybody's trying to copy anything, but I definitely was like, wow, these are very similar. But it does. But like Zach said, they're two different books. You know, it goes from this like Kingkiller Chronicle, like almost YA situation, to just like hard, brutal descriptions of war. And it puts a downer on your mood at some of this to like read it.
Yeah, that the drastic change about halfway through the book when they meet the Chimay. And that part's pretty like dark and scary, you know, but then it just gets darker and darker as you go throughout the book from there. So definitely takes a drastic turn. I'm more on the side of Chris. I really, really enjoyed this book. I would give it a 9 out of 10, just because of the historical context and the way they represented it. I liked the kind of subtle, like the subtle magic system in this, where it's kind of stemmed in reality, but then there is some mysticism that happens within the book. I love Master Jiang. I love like the old mysterious, you know, leader, whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Like mentor.
Yeah. I love that kind of, that trope's one of my favorites. I agree with you, Zach, though. I wasn't super invested in a lot of the characters. You know, Rin is who we get a lot of our time with. And even she, towards the end, you're kind of just like, do something right, please. Like you didn't really like understand why she was doing a lot of the things she was doing. She was just kind of like acting impulsively on whatever she was feeling in that second. And that gets a little frustrating, but I loved the introduction of the Sykes and that whole crew. And I just really liked everything that happened, like the halfway through and on. The beginning part I really liked. There's a little lag in there for a bit. And then towards the end, I got really back on board with it. So all in all, I'd give it a 9 out of 10 there.
I like that you mentioned the magic system, because one thing that I did really like about this book is that I wasn't sure if there would even be a magic system for, you know, a large portion of the book. I think the first time we got like a real inkling of some sort of actual magic going on is when Jiang, like he makes some leaves move, like he like uses the wind and he like moves some leaves or something like that. And I was like, oh wait, there's actually something you can do here. I was almost thinking that it would just be like a very, very soft, like barely magical at all. Like if she can call a god, she'll just be like really angry or something for a little bit. But it does go full fantasy near the end, where I mean, Alton, he can do whatever he wants with fire. I think it was kind of like pretty cool description when he brings out his trident, right? And it has like a flame over the trident or something like that. I thought that was like really cool. So I like how they did the magic system in this book, kind of keeping it under wraps for a bit.
Yeah, I don't want to compare it too much to the Greenbone Saga, because they're, you know, they're both rooted in Asian culture, but they're very, very different books and like representations of that culture. But the early on, the magic system seemed like the exact same. Like you were just able to like channel internally. You didn't maybe need the jade to do it, but you were able to like channel your ki internally and just be like slightly stronger than other fighters. But then, yeah, when it makes that full turn, and Jiang calls the name of the wind, you really start to see what's going on. And so that was very cool.
Yeah.
Zach, I'm curious, can you just give us an example of what a 5-star on Goodreads would be for you? What's your last 5-star that you gave on Goodreads?
I think it was White Noise. I think I gave that one 5 stars. I think I gave every book in the Broken Earth trilogy 5 stars.
Oh, wow. I'm just always curious because you're like, oh, I really like this book. 3 out of 5 on Goodreads. Like,
that's still good. That's still like over 50%.
That is not good.
That's not good. That's average. That's fours. Four is a good book.
But... Well, I think it is hard, like, for our book club. I don't know. I have to think about it, like, more critically. And I think maybe that's kind of the problem, too, is, like, I'm overthinking it. And then it kind of goes down a bit versus, like, enjoying it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I still, like it. I thought it was, like, good. But like I said, just, like, Rin as a character, I just was just so frustrating. The first half, she was super determined. She was smart. She was, like, burning herself to stay awake. She did whatever it took. She was a top of her class, like, strategy-wise. But then when the book changed abruptly to the war, she made, like, every dumbass decision. I didn't know, like, she was flip-flopping. She was, like, afraid, couldn't use her magic. It was just, like, a totally different character. And I was like, what the hell happened? Like, it felt like two different books. And I think that's why my ratings were a little bit lower, because it was just, like, everything just changed. There was, like, zero proper character development, very inconsistent with how she was written and portrayed in both of the books, because I can't even call it, like, one book.
Yeah, I understand that. I actually have that exact note. I was like, the first half of this book should have just been its own book and then stretched it out a little bit, because the time that she spent on whatever her home village was so freaking short. It was just like, she took a bunch of tests, she did some studying, and she's an orphan next. And so I would have definitely liked to see that a little bit more fleshed out. But you also, Zach, you made a note about, like, there not being romance in this book, which is always, like, a plus for me, no matter what. But there was some weird, like, Rin, Niza, Rin, Alton kind of hinting at throughout that. Did you guys think that was just, like, familiar or familial, like, ties from Spearlies, or, like, what did you think that was? Because that was always really confusing to me throughout it.
Yeah, I thought it was weird too. Where she, like, I think she told Alton that, like, she loved him at one point, if I remember right.
Yeah.
There wasn't any, like, internal discussion from Rin's perspective about how she felt about any of this. It was people saying, like, Rin, like, I see the way you look at Kit or
Niza.
I see the way you look at Niza or whatever. And she's like, no, but she never thinks about how she might like Niza. And, like, same with Alton. They're like, she might have thought a little bit about, she was, like, kind of obsessed with Alton, but it didn't ever feel like a romantic obsession to me. It kind of felt more like a she's looking for power more than anything.
Yeah, I agree with what Chris said when it came to, like, Alton. Niza, I still think that maybe they'll date in the next books. I think the first half of this book was so YA-y, and we can go into that later. But even just, like, their, like, meet cutes, how they immediately became, like, sworn enemies, like, right off the bat. And I was like, they're going to start dating here. You know, they'll turn into friends and then they'll start dating. So I think I just went into it being like, this is a YA book. They're going to start dating. And then when they didn't, I was like, pleasantly surprised that they didn't do that. But I'm sure, like, the start of book two, they'll be dating or something. But,
well, he allegedly died, right? I don't believe that he's dead, but,
he's a shaman. Let's get real. Like, he's definitely a shaman of some kind, right?
Yeah, and he's the one that betrayed her. I thought that was super obvious. Yeah, the fortune, it was someone on your side or whatever will betray you or whatever, right? Wasn't that, like, how that one fortune went? And she was like, it had to be the Empress.
But how would Niza know about going to that mountain?
Because remember they had that scene where she told him what their plan was,
but I think
she told Kitsa. Kitsai.
I thought she told Niza because Alton was like, don't tell him anything, don't do it, and she's like, fine, I won't. And then she was talking to Niza and she's like, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but they're like, this is what we're doing.
I thought it was Kitsia or whatever his name is.
I think that was about someone else. Because I think Niza got captured. Then they went to that other town where everyone was killed. And then they made the decision to go to the mountain after that, after Alton had, like, his full breakdown.
Okay.
Never mind that guess.
The Empress was definitely the one that betrayed them. Well, I guess that's what we're supposed to think. But I'd buy it. I mean, I see no reason why she wouldn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's the only one that makes sense, but I could definitely see some kind of like twist where it was like Kitse did it or something weird like that. But we'll get into predictions here a little bit. Before we get too much further into the story, I did want to just go over some historical context that's from the book. This is solely based off of what I remember from junior year college Eastern Asian culture studies class. So don't get mad at me if I get some of these facts wrong, but most of this book was based off of the Second Sino-Japanese War, which was basically just World War II in the East Pacific theater. And so that was just when Japan invaded China. There were some things that led up to that. In the early 1800s, there was the Poppy Wars, which was basically the United Kingdom had a big poppy trade that they established in China. And they got a lot of the country addicted to opium. They got a lot of bad stuff that happened within China. China essentially really suffered from that. And so they made a big push to get the UK and the entire poppy trade out of their country. Whole thing happened. Whole war happened. UK ended up winning and basically got Hong Kong was leased to them for 100 years after that. And so that's why Hong Kong in general has a little bit more Western culture involved with it, is because UK owned it through most of the 1800s and 1900s. And then the first Sino-Japanese War happened, which was basically a war between Korea, Japan, and China. It was Japan and China fighting over ownership, essentially, of Korea. Japan ultimately won that war and moved a lot of their territories within Korea and within northern China. Then the Boxers happened, which became a movement in northern China that essentially their whole thing was like, we don't want Christianity, we don't want Western values, we don't want any other outside influence involved in our country. And so they basically started an entire, it's not a religious war, but it's kind of a religious war within northern China and Manchuria specifically. And they believed that they were essentially from heaven and that they were like God's gift to the earth, and they were invulnerable from bullets and invulnerable from all these different ways that people could kill them. And were also very skilled in martial arts, which is how they got the name Boxers from, I believe it was France that was there. It was the first ones to see them. They were like, oh, those are Boxers. And so they formed a whole rebellion within the country. It was pushed back. It was the first time I believe that the U.S. got involved in any international disputes within China. All of that led to a lot of anti-foreign sentiment, a lot of kicking Japan and kicking other countries out of China. And China became isolationist in their policies, which led to the second Sino-Japanese War. Japan wanted to, at this point, thought that they were gods or the sun people, that they were born of the sun god and that they should rule the entire world. They invaded Manchuria in 1932, I think, and kicked off a lot of the World War II in the Eastern Pacific theater. This was the biggest war between Japan and China and led to a lot of atrocities. The Japanese people did horrible, horrible things to China. The biggest one of this being the rape of Nanjing. This is kind of, it really didn't come into light until the 1980s when globalization started happening more and the stories of what actually happened reached other parts of the world. And essentially the Japanese killed like 300,000 is the agreed number right now, 300,000 Chinese people just in Nanjing alone. And then they also did this similar thing to in other cities of smaller death counts, but that was the largest one. It's known as like the Forgotten Holocaust. And it wasn't just like they didn't just kill them. It was horrible, horrible atrocities that happened there. A lot of obviously rape. It's called the Rape of Nanjing, but there's a lot of terrible, terrible things that happened. The worst of them being Unit 731, which was essentially like a specialized group of Japanese soldiers that experimented on people of experimented on Chinese people and tried to like create different beings out of these Chinese people. And so that's like the group that was the most known out of all of that. And so people always talk about, you know, the Holocaust in Germany and things like that, but there was that same thing happening in other parts of the world. It just doesn't get, you know, it wasn't the millions of Jews killed, but it was definitely hundreds of thousands. So there was a lot that went up to the Rape of Nanjing. So there's kind of, there's debate about what caused it, that the Chinese people attacked Japan first with firebombs, which led to the Rape of Nanjing. But anyways, that's the historical context of it. So you can see a lot of parallels between that with the Mugens being the Japanese, the Nikarans being the Chinese, and then the Spearlies being probably like Taiwan, which was like a fought over territory during a lot of that. So
sure,
there's a little historical context. Wow. I hope I got most of that right. I don't know.
Well, from what you said, you know, there's a lot of parallels there. Like I can even think of like Unit 731 being that Dr. Shino or whatever, like how he was working on people, you know, obviously Poppy Wars, the book's called Poppy War. So I'm sure they got a lot of inspiration from that. But I mean, clearly the second half of the book is, in my estimation, supposed to be like, this is what happened. Like, this is what happened to China. And mm-hmm. we're just changing the names, but like, this is what happened. And if this world was a thing, maybe we would have turned Japan into a volcano, you know, like that kind of a deal. So,
yeah. And right after all this, the great like Chinese civil war broke out. So I assume which is a war between all the warlords of China. So I assume that book two is going to be heavily about the civil wars in China, which led to a lot of famine and other issues that happened, but looking forward to that or not. I don't know. It's kind of depressing stuff, but there you go.
That makes sense.
I hope everyone learned something. But yeah, this is one of the most fascinating times of history to me. So when this book started and I started seeing some of those parallels, I got pumped about it. See that kind of written out and historical fiction was cool.
Yeah. Something that we didn't really mention on our overall thoughts was just like how I think that's like a big selling point maybe for this book is that the subject matter and the fact that especially for Western audiences, we don't like know a lot about it. Like there's a million books written about the Holocaust from whether it's fiction or nonfiction. But at least I don't see a lot of books about like this first and second Sino-Japanese wars or, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I think it is an important point to put on an overall thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, largely like US was never involved in that stuff. So obviously we don't hear about it. Like they were obviously towards the end of the second Sino-Japanese war, but, which I mean, yeah, we'll get into more of that later, but you can kind of see like parallels between like the nuclear bombs and like the mountain exploding and stuff like that. I don't know if that's the correlation they're trying to make there or what it was, but yeah, it was very important to US, you know, international relations for a long time. We just don't hear about it much anymore, which is weird, but yeah, important to know before we went into this, I feel like. Well, cool. Now that we have that all typed up here, let's go into some lore from the actual book.
Yeah, I gotta say, you got the trifecta written here. Did you write this out, Brandon? We got the Gatekeeper, the Viperess, and the Red Junk Opera.
No. I don't know who the third one was. I couldn't remember. That was the next point, is the Red Junk Opera.
It's the Red Emperor. I believe it's the Red Emperor, who they just referred to as the Emperor most of the book. And I also have a question a little bit lower, like what's the difference between the Red Emperor and the Dragon Emperor? Because I do think they're two different things. But I didn't know if you guys like got that, because the trifecta is essentially still in power, right? The Viperess is leading the country. The Gatekeeper has basically, he like fucked off. He's like, I don't care anymore. And then there's also the third one, who's the Red Emperor. So like, I don't know. I don't think we know what happened to the Red Emperor. But then there's also this Dragon Emperor figure who I think came before them, but I'm not sure if you guys caught all that.
Who's the Dragon Emperor? I don't remember. I remember the Dragon Warlord, but who's the Dragon Emperor?
There's a Dragon Warlord who's not the Dragon Emperor. And maybe I shouldn't get too deep into this because I might have just like been misremembering. But I thought that the Dragon Emperor was the one that basically united the country. I don't know how long ago. And then after the Dragon Emperor, I think there was like a warring states period for a bit. And then the trifecta kind of reconsolidated all the power. And so that I feel like I remember a lot of lines where they were talking about, oh, during the Dragon Emperor's time, like it was everything was peaceful or whatever. Or maybe it was the Red Emperor's time. I don't know. I can't remember which switch.
Are we sure that the trifecta wasn't the Gatekeeper, the Vipress, and the Dragon Emperor, and then they were part of the Red Empire? Because the Red Empire was what Nikara was before all of this. They were known as like the Red Empire, but now when it became 12 Warlords, when the Dragon Emperor died or left or whatever, then it's no longer the Red Empire.
That might be it. I think that sounds right.
All right, we're going to pause real quick. I'm going to find this real
fast. So who's the trifecta? Because
that's what I want to figure out here. Oh my God, it's so great having wikis dedicated to a book for once.
Okay. Yeah, hopefully they have it just like written out for us, huh?
Yeah, we're going to come back in now. Okay. All right, so to clarify, I guess, just looked real fast. Dragon Emperor, Vipress, and Gatekeeper were the trifecta that ruled, were the generals during the Red Empire.
Okay, so gotcha.
We were close. We were scratching on the door there. We just weren't quite in.
Right. Okay, so is the Dragon Emperor dead then?
I don't think we know anything about who the Dragon Emperor is. But now that we're saying it out loud, it's got to be the Dragon Warlord. It's got to be Nyssa's dad. And then Nyssa is a descendant of the Dragon Emperor and has the Dragon Emperor's powers and such.
That makes sense. Yeah, I like that.
Or maybe Nyssa is the Dragon Emperor.
Well, why would the Dragon Emperor downgrade himself to the Dragon Warlord if it was already the Dragon Emperor?
That's a good question, Chris.
Maybe to hide in plain sight. I don't know. It's not like any of these other characters have great motivations anyway. That could work.
The Vipress would have to recognize him, right?
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Well, maybe he just liked the title Warlord better than Emperor. I don't know.
Yeah. Also, how old are these people? Because like, how old is the Gatekeeper? Like, how long has he been hanging around the world or whatever?
A couple hundred years.
A while. Yeah, I mean, at least hundreds.
What makes you think a couple hundred years?
Because I don't know. This like seems like a lot of like the history happened in between. I called like two different Poppy Wars, right? Happened in between. So I feel like there had been some time.
The trifecta disbanded.
That could be like 40 years.
But the way we talk about them is they're like
the trifecta is still going on because the Vipress is still here. Yeah.
I'm gonna assume they're like 100 years old. That's just kind of what I was going with.
Because I can't picture them.
Yeah.
Okay.
If not, I'm going to be a little disappointed. If it was they're 20 years ago.
They found some way human to like not look old.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have the gods on their side, so use the gods' power, I suppose. All right. The next point here is the Red Junk Opera, and I put this on here because this was mentioned a couple times. I have no fucking clue what this is. I think this is supposed to be like the boxers and the history I was just talking about, where they're just like a religious group that doesn't want, you know, other people invading the country. But I thought they were going to be a way bigger deal in this book after the first, you know, quarter of the book.
Yeah.
I don't even, to be honest with you, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't even know what this is.
Basically, they made a few mentions of it. The Warlords talked about it a few times. They're a religious cult of bandits. That's, I think, the extent of what we know about
them. Yeah, I just remember them being like bandits, but I don't think they ever made a huge impact.
Maybe so it must be a bigger deal, in the later books.
Okay, I just didn't know if I was like missing something or forgot something, but okay, sounds like I didn't. So, cool. The Spearleys, man. This was the coolest part of the book.
I love this.
One of my favorite parts. Yeah. Basically, just to recap, an island of people. They were shamans. They're an ancient people. Then after during the Second Poppy War, depending on who you ask, the Mugens or the Nikara killed them. But I thought the most interesting part was the queen of that island. Her name was Yirza, I believe. just her like standing up to the Phoenix God and like doing that for the safety of the world rather than the preservation of the Spearleys. I loved that whole aspect of it.
Yeah, that was
anything
really
else
cool
to say there?
I think we all knew that Rin was a Spearley, like immediately when she's like an orphan of the war, and there's this chosen one national like type of like location, and those people hold like mysterious powers. I felt like it. We all knew that Rin was from there.
That's funny because I was skeptical she was a Spearley for like a lot of the book until only her and Alton could use fire. Because I didn't put any thought into like where she came from. I didn't care at all. I never thought about like, oh, I wonder what part of some country she came from. And I would hear about Spearleys and I didn't know like what it was or why it was significant. So I was never thinking like, oh, she's definitely this. And then I just felt like it was kind of abrupt when like they told her she was a Spearley because she used fire. You're like, oh, you use fire? That means you're a Spearley. And she's like, oh, I guess I'm a Spearley. So, you know, we didn't get like a big journey. Obviously we did. We did get a big journey at the end of the book, but I was almost like, maybe she's not a Spearley. Maybe she's from something else. And she can do any sort of magic. Like Spearleys can only do fire. I was like, well, maybe she can do fire and other shit, but yeah.
So you were hoping for you were hoping for The Last Jedi, where, you know, you can be a Jedi from anywhere. Doesn't matter what your background is. But what she really got was The Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
She was a Palpatine after all.
Yeah, when you put it like that, I guess, yeah, I just wasn't, you know, when you put it like that, Zach, how you're like, it's so obvious. I do think about it. I'm like, yeah, I guess it is pretty obvious. I guess I just wasn't very interested in making that connection.
Yeah, I mean, I really didn't care where she was from either until they introduced a mysterious island that powerful people come from, but there's none left. Then I'm like, okay.
It's pretty weird. Yeah, right. I mean, it is getting a little exhausting how if there is an orphan or if there is any child that doesn't know where they're from, they will be from the most important thing possible. Like, that is getting a little bit of an exhausted trope. I liked it in this because the Spearleys were cool and I liked that whole, like, background behind it, but like,
yeah,
it would be refreshing to read not that, just an orphan, yeah, because they're an orphan.
I mean,
go ahead.
Oh no, I'll say that the first half of the book was my favorite part, but I feel like all the tropes have been exhausted that they use for like the school stuff.
Well, I'll say this is something I did like about the Spearleys. I think it's a little bit trope breaking where like they have access to this power, but from the very beginning, it's been like, yeah, they have access to this amazing power, but it sucks. Like, it's actually not cool to interact with this god, like, at all. And every single person and their mother told Rin, like, look, like, this is a bad, bad fucking deal. Like, you don't, like, the fire only consumes. The fire only consumes. You're not getting anything from this Phoenix. And it basically, like, that's kind of, like, I think they alluded to a couple times, like, that's why the Spearleys were never able to be, like, more powerful, is because they were always fighting between each other. They're always consuming their own island, essentially. So they're never able to like really expand. And so I did like that part of the Spearleys and their lore. Like, it doesn't seem like there's no good to this magic. It's like power corrupts in this situation.
Yeah, that's a really good point that they consumed themselves so much that they basically in the end just consumed themselves out of existence. And then everyone always tries to blame it on the Mugens or the Nikkaras, but it was just an internal struggle that they could just never really like figure out. In the end, it still was the Nikkara, but you know, or the Mugen, yeah. I guess, but you know, it's a good point. All right, let's keep moving on. The Sykes, what were your thoughts on them?
I liked the Sykes. I thought they were kind of fun. I think they would be maybe the best part about the next book is if you could really like flesh out some of their characters. I'd be really interested in a little bit more about really all of them. And I could see myself getting more attached to one of the Sykes than certainly Rin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it sounds like we're going to get a lot more of them. Hold on. I'm going to go over real quick who the Sykes were. So we had Bahi. I don't remember what he does, but he was smart and horny. Unegin, who was intelligence gathering and could talk to birds. She was also the sister of Shigan. We had Aratasha, who was a bucket of water.
Yeah.
Could say that seriously. We'll we're going to touch on that in a second. Yeah, yeah. Give me 1 second. I'll go through these. We're going to definitely touch on that. Suni, who was like hard to control, but was the best fighter that they had. I think he was the gorilla guy.
Yeah.
Kara. Sorry. Kara is the one that talks to birds. Excuse me. Unegin was just the guy that got intelligence. And then Shigan, who could talk to the gods and was like the vessel for future sightseeing and stuff like that. So, yeah. Did you all have a favorite of those? Is there one that you were like, were pumped every time they did anything?
No, they were all kind of like the same person to me, to be honest. I didn't take much time to learn like the difference between the people that she was with, but I like the site because it's a really cool idea. Kind of like what Chris was saying, I would have liked maybe a slower introduction to them, having like more fleshed out, more personalities. But like I said, as soon as we left the school, yeah. It's like, here's a brand new cast of characters, like deal with it.
So Zach, you're saying you would have liked a little bit more content in the middle of the book there, a little bit more fleshed out in the middle.
I mean, literally, yeah. This is like they took my
stop
opinion
the
too far. Yeah. They literally took out the middle of this book.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah.
They listened to me a little too much.
Yeah, it should be two books, like you said earlier. You know, we get introduced to the Sykes, and then you can really go like full fucking grim dark in the next book.
Yeah. Because they really did just like yada yada, like the last 2 years of university, and then just jumped straight into a war. Like, what?
Yeah.
Just skipped over 2 years of schooling and introduced like a new cast of characters. It's like, what's going on?
Yeah. Once they did the Jiang like training montage, the book really was just like, and then they finished school and then the war started, and you're like, okay, all right. I did forget one character there was Ramsa, who was the young guy that made the bombs, who wasn't a shaman. And I was kind of like confused about why he was there, but he just was like a pyrotechnic guy that was good at making bombs. I really liked, I think it was Suni who was the gorilla guy. I really liked like,
yeah,
he gave Alton that softer side where he'd like calm him after he freaked out and like, you know, dole him down a little bit. So it gave Alton a little bit of a personality or a little bit of a softer side, which I liked that a lot. So it was cool seeing him and just the idea of like a giant troll dude just like running through lines of people was cool. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about Alton here. I don't see Alton on our list. But do you guys have any general thoughts on Alton? Like, did you like him as a character or not?
Yeah, he was by far my favorite character of this book. I feel like he's the only one that had any sort of character development at all. I thought they did like a really good job showing him struggling, him trying to put on like a brave face, Ren kind of buying into it, but the other people kind of seeing through it, him struggling, like not using his powers, but then like deciding like we need to like free these people, him, the scene just like him in that torture room, and then him deciding to like sacrifice himself. I don't really like that he had to like kill himself like that. I feel like he could have gotten away, but I understood why he did that. And then you just hear about his tragic background of he was like one of the only survivors on that island, and he's been carrying that like with him, and they basically trained him and experimented on him the whole time. I just feel like everything like worked. His motivations worked for me. I understood why he did certain things, even if I didn't like it, I at least understood it. And he didn't know what he was gonna do like in a good way.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I was gonna say almost the opposite of that. I just wanted to see more of Alton the person before he became Alton like the opium addict, Alton the like loses his temper guy. I wanted to see like him as a character before we saw that transformation. But once you learn that he's addicted to opium, it kind of makes sense that wouldn't exist. But like at the time, I felt lacking of like, I don't really care about his turn. All I know is that Rin cares about him. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense ultimately in the storytelling. But everything else you say, I agree with that.
I liked how when he did die, it kind of explained essentially, look, like this guy wanted to die. Like he's been wanting to die for a long fucking time. And this is his happy ending, you know, to be able to to kill these fucking people and just go out in a blaze of glory. And he's got to die, which at this point, I'm not sure Rin would be able to.
I agree with that, though. The fact that he was able to kind of like choose the perfect way for him to die, like protecting another Spearly, being able to kind of live up to what they trained him all that time to do was, I always hate when someone's like, everyone else go, I'll sacrifice myself to give you an extra 2 seconds. I usually hate that, but to hear it kind of made sense with this whole like story or his character arc. So
yeah.
Do you buy that he would pass on the torch to Rin? Because
because
from like a logical point of view, I'm like, no way in hell he'd do this, but from like a book fantasy, Rin is the main character. I knew right away, like when he had to like pick a new person.
I think it makes sense. It was the reason I asked about the relationship thing with Rin, because like I bought it so much until she was like, I love him. I was like, I liked the older brother's younger sister vibe that they had going up until that point, and she kind of made it, Rin, you made it weird, but I don't know. I bought it up until that point, so I think it makes sense. I just don't, I would never trust her in command of anything, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Who's the other option? Oh. The other option would be Cha'Gun, right?
Yeah, I guess.
A great option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they had some weird thing, and I think he is, as much as we liked Alton, I would consider him probably a Spearly supremacist. You know, probably a proud nationalist Spearly. So I think it would make sense for sure for him to be like, no, we're keeping the Spearly strong here. And plus, she's got to take down the Empress or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. He's definitely nationalist in his viewpoints. all right. Well, speaking of Cha'Gun, the Anchor Twins, they just touched on this briefly. I just thought this was an interesting thought that Cha'Gun and Kara could feel each other. And they were basically like a, whatever they called it in Star Wars, like a dyad of the Force, but like they shared feelings, they shared abilities. Like, I just thought that was a really cool. They didn't really go into it. Once again, I would have loved to see a little bit more of what that means, but I think it should be an interesting thing for book two to explore a little bit more. So,
yeah. Well, what's up with the bucket of water character?
Dude, what is up with the bucket of water character?
What even was that? Because I don't even know what I read. Like, I thought I read like some sort of like a human shaped water or something. I don't even remember. Like, what was that?
I think she can do that, but she can't, like, she's not mobile without being in the bucket. So they like put her back in the bucket, and then when she's ready to fight, and she comes out of the bucket and does the whole like what? It's like the Wonder Twins, basically. It's like Wonder Twins,
and they never explained
a bucket of water. Yeah, they never explained. Yeah, they said that she got so close and developed such a close relationship with her god that she never wanted to leave that like god form, basically.
Wow.
Then past it, that they were like, yeah, she's just a bucket of water.
Wild.
Wow.
Wild.
Just a weird character to have. I can't imagine she's going to be my favorite, but we'll see in the next book.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on past the lore. Touch on some of the important plot points throughout the book. I'm just going to start off with a weird one. The scene where Rin gets her first period and then destroys her uterus was just wild. That was like, I think she'd already been burning herself with a candle, but then going on to that was,
I was going to say, when she was burning herself and then this scene, they should have been our first hints at, you know, like where this book was gonna go, because, you know, like a graphic scene, and especially when she's like burning herself, from the very beginning we're supposed to understand that this is a person who like is willing, like is not as worried about consequences as some other people might be. You know, she's thinking about right now, she's very in the moment, you know, and just a little bit of foreshadowing for that.
Very tunnel visioned. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to bring that up because it was shocking when that happened. I was like, what the hell am I reading? Definitely turned the tone of the book a bit.
Yeah, it's definitely made me think differently to the university that they would allow, you know, underage girls, 12, 13, 14, you know, girls who are just getting their periods to make this life changing decision. And
the doctor was like, good idea. This is
great. Yeah. They didn't do like any sort of like hesitancy. So, I mean, it was really, you know, it's a huge decision for Ren, but I thought it was even crazy of a decision for these like grown adults to allow children to make these decisions.
To encourage, not even just allow, encourage. I think the doctor's words were like, I tell all the girls to do this. They don't listen to me.
Yeah. That was my
Biggest, that guy should be fired. Takeaway.
Yeah.
There needs to be an investigation into that doctor.
Not in 2023, he wouldn't be allowed to be a doctor, I'll tell you what.
Well, he could probably move down to Florida and do that, but all right, anyways, going on, I guess we got highlights and lowlights, but the Jiang Ren, the training montage, like, one was just direct plagiarism from the book Holes. Like, you must carry the pig up the mountain and it'll drink and get stronger. And then when it's strong, you must come back and take Madame Zeroni so I can drink and get strong, or you will be cursed forever and always. And it was just like, what the fuck? I don't know. Maybe this is like a thing that's popular in ancient Asian stories and stuff, but like, definitely, it was too similar.
That's funny. Yeah. I didn't even think of Holes. It is very similar now that you mention it.
Yeah. Did you buy the whole she's a way better fighter and knows her body because she like carried a pig?
Well, it'd make you strong as hell if you're doing like a 5 mile, 10 mile hike every day with a pig on your shoulders. Make you strong as shit.
She'd definitely be like super fucking fit, like, because that's a full body workout when you get to the bigger side of that pig, you know?
Yeah. I get it. Like, it'll make you stronger, but I don't know if it like translates to like throwing your fists and ducking and dodging.
After she finished the task, then he taught her fighting after that. So there was like a whole, like, once again, it was too short. It was just like, and they fought. She's better at fighting now. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's like half of the second King Killer book is Quoth and his master like learning wild shit, you know?
There was a quote at some point in this book from Jiang that was like, if you're gonna try to fly, you don't just jump off the roof right away, or something like that. And I was like, is that a direct callback to the whatever the second book's called? Wise Man.
Like, Wise Man's
Fear. Yeah. It's interesting. There was also, I think, a Greenbone call out in here too, because they lived in the Jade District and the guy's name was Lan. And I was like, huh, is that like a, I don't know. Might be a Jade City callback, but I don't know. Jade District's probably pretty common. So
yeah, I bet they do a lot of Jade stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this next one on the plot points is one I was thinking of. The Viperess or the Empress or whatever, she killed the leader of the Sykes. Like, she set him up. Why'd she do that?
I was expecting it to come back at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't.
I almost... Like, I don't know if they were like, he was going crazy to her eyes. Like, she couldn't control him. Like, he had a close relationship to his god. I don't know.
They would have sent him to the mountain, right? If he was going like crazy.
Yeah.
I think they did send him to the mountain. I think that Ren made a comment that they saw him in the mountain.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think he is in the mountain, but.
Well, that would
make
sense.
Well, it didn't seem like he was losing his mind, though. It seemed like he was just doing his mission, and then she's like, nope, you're dead. So maybe I was under the impression that she was doing something that she didn't want him to report to other people. So, like, she needed him as protection. She was doing something nefarious, and then she just killed him so that she couldn't tell anyone else. But
yeah, but like you said, Brandon, I was expecting that to come back. Like, I was expecting to learn why. But I didn't think we did.
I really wish we would have gotten that in this book. Some more like interludes, because that was like a cool part of like, wow, we like actually switched POVs.
Yeah.
We're seeing a different part of the world, different relationships, new magic. We get to see like the Empress and all that. So I was like hoping like, oh, is between every part we're going to get like a couple interludes, but it was just like that one off thing that didn't affect or, you know, come back to play at least in this book.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that too. But I'm sure all of the Empress's crimes are going to come back at some point. I feel like that scene was just there to show us that she's the Viperess, and that was it, really. But
yeah, and you can't trust her. Like, be wary of her, probably.
Yeah, be wary of her. Yeah. I wonder what her deal is. I am curious about the Empress. Like, what are her motivations? What's her history? Why is she fucking killing her most loyal lieutenants? I think her power is interesting, how anybody looks at her and they're like, oh my God, I fucking love her. Like, that's a goddamn empress. I'll tell you what, you know, like, I think that's interesting. I'd like to know more about that.
Oh yeah. Maybe I have the Viperous powers. I get that a lot.
Yeah. I'd much rather read like a prequel about like the trifecta and about like the
definitely
set, like all that. It'd be a lot better. Or I would like enjoy that.
Very cool. Well, speaking of the trifecta, just one scene that I thought was cool, had some like Deathly Hallows vibes to it, was when they went back to the city, Rin and Kitse, and they saw that puppet show that talked about the trifecta, that gave us some more insights into who they were, what they were. Just a cool scene. I mean, if they made this into a movie, that's going to be an awesome scene. And so I just really liked like that storytelling trope of like, we went to a puppet show and learned about these things instead of the author just like telling us about it. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
What'd you guys think of the Chimai, the face stealer?
I thought it was fun.
Fun?
It was fun. Well,
yeah, I thought it was fun.
I would not call it fun. It was like so fucking horrifying.
I thought, again, it was one of those that seemed obvious, like a little kid, like there's a shapeshifter in the forest and like a little girl runs up to them.
I got that one too.
Yeah. It was like, okay. Like we know what's coming, but I kind of forgot. Did she have to actually steal the faces to transform, or could she just like transform into like get into someone's mind? Because she transformed into Rin's like, or, oh yeah, Alton, I guess. Yeah, that kind of answers the question.
Yeah, it knows every face, so it reads your mind and then creates the best likeliness to that face possible. But it was just like the hopelessness that you felt and like the despair that we saw from Rin was like really crushing. I thought, I don't know, I had a tough time getting through that part. That was kind of,
it was
I think Princess Mononoke maybe is the no, this is Avatar Last Airbender. They had a face stealer in there.
That's what I was gonna say. I thought I saw this from Avatar.
This book is inspired by Avatar though.
Is it?
She made like a comment on the Goodreads and it said it's Avatar was a big inspiration for the story. Obviously, real life history was. And then, like, Game of Thrones. Like, those are kind of like, and a couple other kind of like, you know, fantasy books. But the Last Airbender kind of surprised me.
Nice.
Did she say it was the Sino-Japanese War, the Second Sino-Japanese War? Did she specify that?
I believe so, yeah.
Fuck yeah. All right, yeah. Cool.
If you go on Goodreads and look at like the 5-star reviews, she made a little comment.
Okay. I should have done more research. Okay. okay. Did we talk about what is this one? Federation General. Oh, okay. So then the next one was when they got to the city and saw all the dead soldiers and raped soldiers. And then that one woman survivor, that was kind of the older lady who was in, you know, whatever the brothel, which was basically just like the rape center for these warriors. That was the most devastating thing I've ever read in a book before. The general, I mean, I don't want to get into too much, basically ripped the baby in half. And raped many women to death. That scene, I don't know, that like will stick with me, I think, forever. That was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really intense. I think you had put it in our group chat, Brandon, something along the lines of, this might be the least YA book I've ever read, or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, and I got to this part, I was like, I think this might be referring to.
Well, Zach had early on been like, I'm 50 pages in. This is a very YA book. Just a heads up, guys. And then I got to that point. I was like, this is no longer we've left the realm of YA now and moved on to the land of awful terrors and rape. So
yeah, that was a very, very tough chapter to listen to. Even leading up to that too, when they're on like that boat going into the river, and there's like, why are there so many bodies this part? Why would they send bodies this far down the river? And they're like, oh fuck, like this is gonna be all bodies to the town. Like that creeped me out.
Ugh.
Yeah, and then describing the smell too was I don't know like how much dead stuff you guys have smelled, but it is not a good smell. So
ugh.
I can't even imagine thousands of bodies. Ugh. Goodness.
Yeah.
All right. So then when Alton and Rin visit the mountain, this was the dumbest shit I've ever, like, this was so fucking stupid. Why, who in their right mind? I know that Alton was like opiumed up, but for Rin to go along with this was just fucking nuts.
Top of her class and strategy.
No, but they showed that she was willing to sacrifice her people. So there's that.
I don't. There's just no way that plan was going to work out. There's no way.
Yeah.
And then we kind of already touched on the Queen Tirza, who was the queen of the Spearlies. But it was interesting, like every time Rin went to the Pantheon, that woman was always kind of guarding the entrance to the actual gods, being like, don't you do that. Was this like an effective storytelling piece to you guys or aspect to you guys? Did you like this part? Was it unnecessary? What did you think of her?
Ooh, I liked it because I was kind of wondering who's the one trying to prevent Rin from fully accessing the gods. And I think of all like the backstory you could give that person for it to be the person who lived in Rin's country and the one that had to make that difficult decision. Like that worked really well for me.
Yeah. Was it her mom?
It was the queen of the Spearlies.
Yeah. But she like called her daughter at the end.
So, I think that's just kind of like a Spearly thing. Just like she's the queen, so all of them are daughters, but maybe. I don't know.
But it would not be surprising.
The timeline would line up, though, wouldn't it? Right?
She's a Palpatine.
I definitely think there's definitely something for that, too, because they've already foreshadowed some stuff of, like, why am I the only survivor? So I feel like they'll come back that she has some, like, royal blood. Like,
they'll put her in a basket and, like, push her down the river. you know?
Moses?
Yeah.
Just like Moses.
Yeah.
But before we go too far, back in the mountain, did you guys like Jank showing back up? Like they took him out of his little entombment. They're like, hey, and he's like, hey, what's going on, guys? And then he's like, yeah, no, dude, I gotta go back to bed actually. So you guys can just do your thing.
I just felt bad for this guy. He was constantly like, you guys are idiots. Stop doing the things you're doing. And then they do it. And he's like, all right, fuck it. I'm going back to the rock. He's like, I don't know.
I'm too old for this shit, man.
Yeah.
Being a rock in this mountain is literally better than talking to either of you two. So I'm just going to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking poor guy. Hopefully he gets his way in the next book. I'm begging that he's a main character in the next book. Like he gets out of the mountain and comes back and it plays an active role in all of this.
I think he will like in book three. This is definitely giving me like that vibe of this character is too smart and too powerful. So we have to like literally put him on ice for a couple books to bring him back.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Like Yesna and Gandalf and like name any sort of mentor or someone who knows something. You have to kind of put him away for a bit.
Yeah, he definitely can solve the
problems.
Much.
Yeah, because then they can answer every question and solve the problems.
Too level headed for this crew of fucking bizarre children doing whatever the hell they want. So, all right. I think that's hitting all. And then obviously we have Rin at the end killing everyone. So,
she killed everyone on that island, right?
Yeah.
Everybody.
All of them.
The entire population. Done.
Yeah.
Which makes you think, like, did Alton, was Alton kind of pushing her towards this path? Like, maybe that was the Empress's move all along, was to, like, push, because Alton had the plan for the dam set perfectly. So he was going to kill all the Mugen on the mainland, or on Nikara. He needed a way to kill all the Mugen on their island too. So I'm wondering if there was some kind of deal between Alton and the Empress, or something to push Rin along this path towards killing everybody.
Yeah. Maybe a plan that he didn't even know that he was enacting.
True. Yeah. I mean, the Empress kept him out of being a lore student so that he would be in the military. So maybe the Empress was like grooming him all along for this specific mission, and then he couldn't do it. So she brought Rin in to finish the rest.
So at the end of this book, the question I have for you guys is Rin in the second book and the third book, is she still the protagonist, or is she now the antagonist? Like, is she no longer the good guy?
She has to. That's a great question, guy. Because I don't know, like, how morally you could bounce back from this, especially the way the author depicts violence and war and the consequences of it. There's no way you can have Rin be a main good character, like a protagonist in any way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it'll still be told from her perspective, but yeah. I think we'll be actively rooting against her for most of it. But I don't know, because I mean, the rest of the Sykes seem like, you know, we're gonna be rooting for them. I mean, Korra and Shigan have like their heads on straight-ish, maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll guide her in the right direction. I don't know.
It'll be an interesting thing in book two. I would almost kind of like another POV of maybe somebody, one of the survivors from the other island or whatever, or something like literally. Just like a recreation of Rin, you know, and then they come back and like they fucking get Rin, you know, like she's the big bad, you know, like from their perspective. I would love something like that.
Yes, that would be awesome. Oh man, one of the Mugens, it's like, oh, you destroyed our whole country, and now I'm a shaman, I'm gonna fight back. Something like that would be very nice. Yeah, we'll see. All right, let's go through some highlights, lowlights. Let's start with low. Zach, what was the lowest point of this book for you?
Ooh, I think the lowest point was like the switch from like the YA novel, school novel, into like the war. Because it felt like whiplash. Like, I didn't know what was going on. Rin had an entirely different personality, brand new cast of characters. There wasn't like a easy transition into what was going on. It was a total shift, and I just couldn't tell who this was like for. You know, it's way too graphic for a 14-year-old to read, but I feel like the characters are way too immature for like an adult audience to really like want to read. So I think that switch, when it switched from a YA book that I was enjoying to this brutal genocide, then that was kind of like the low point for me. It needed to be like two books.
Okay. Do you think that they made everyone young and immature because they're going to have like significant time jumps between this and the next book, and then the second and third books, so that they wanted to like have the whole progression of her life, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, probably. And I think I don't know, maybe not to give like too much credit, but I think a lot of it is, this is war. Like, you are just living a fun, normal life, and all of a sudden, like, oh shit, like, they're here. And then everything changes, and the young get roped in. So there might be some of that, but I think that there could have been better ways to showcase that instead of, and then 2 years passed, and then all of a sudden, like, the war happens.
Yeah, definitely could have filled in some blanks. I agree with you there. What about you, Chris?
So, yeah, I mean, I guess my lowlight's similar to yours. I think... Really, my biggest issue with this book is that I think it put me in like a bad mood. Like, I think it put me like in like a really downer mood. So for like the couple days that I was like really in on this book for the end, I think I was kind of like depressed, you know? So, you know, I think like, I think like that's a reason to say that like a book is good in some senses if it can get like that kind of a reaction out of me. But it was a downer. So, you know, that's that. What about you, Brandon?
No, I mean, I agree with that for sure. It's like, that's a really effective storytelling, really effective writing for her to make you feel that way. But it's like not always what I want to leave reading fiction, you know? So,
yeah.
My low light would be, and I've already talked about this like three times throughout the pod, but I did not like, I wish they just would have made the relationship between Rin and Nisa and Rin and Alton clear. I wanted to know, are we supposed to be rooting for a love interest? Is there a love interest? Is this a sisterly brotherly thing? Is this a familial thing? Is this like we're from the same nation? I just wanted like maybe some clear, and maybe it's on purpose. Like maybe Rin doesn't even know. But when she said, you know, I love Alton, so la la, I was like, I don't know. And it just didn't make any sense. Alton had done nothing to make her love him, and she did anyways. So it was kind of confusing to me, but
yeah,
I would have liked to just get more conversation between not drugged up Alton and her before that happened.
What's your highlight?
That's a great question. I had several. I really like this book. I think my highlight is probably the first raid on the Federation when we got to kind of see all the psychs like working together and using their powers in their own indistinct ways. Either that or the Federation response to it. I thought that I did not see that coming. I did not think that was actually going to happen. Like, I just thought that was shocking and very cool. What about you guys?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Those are both really good. I went with the world building. It just hit me in the right spot. I feel like how long it waited to show us some of the more like mystical parts. I liked how long it took. I liked the way they introduced it with like psychedelics and that kind of thing. And it showed you just enough. It's like, there's a lot more, it seems like there's a lot more to it, you know, and I'm excited to learn more about it if I do continue the series. So I like that part about it.
Yeah, gave you just enough, but like kept you wanting more too. Yeah, I agree with that. Zach?
I think my highlight would be that little like interlude chapter that we got with like the Empress.
Nice.
I think that was like the highlight, was you gotta see a new pocket of the world, realize that there's like a bigger game at play and like more compelling mysteries for me. I think that was like the highlight for me. Also, like I mentioned, I love the boat scene. That kind of took my breath away of like, oh fuck, like what are they gonna stumble upon? And I like the school stuff, but I think definitely that little peek of what else is going on in this world was my favorite.
Nice. Yeah
it was cool too, because it showed us like what you can actually do with a god's power as well, which was we were like begging for them to tell us something, and they did, and that was nice. So all right, let's hit a few just general questions about this. I mean, I'm gonna start with the first one. Did you like the pacing of this book? We've complained a lot about too fast, too slow, too this, too that, one and more here. Overall, as a story, did you like the pacing?
No, I think this might be like, no, I think this might be one of like the biggest pacing issues of a fantasy book that we've read. You know, for me, they really breeze through her home life, which is like fine. You had like the school stuff, but then they breezed through like the training montage, and then they gave like a sentence of she was in school for another 2 years. It's like, what, you know, like what's going on there? I feel like they kind of breeze through the her and like Nisa like becoming friends again, or like respecting each other, or kind of like working together. The war flipped on a dime, just her thoughts into like genocide. I don't know. I just feel like it was, the pacing was super off for me.
See, that surprises me from you, Zach, because generally I feel like if they would have included more of her school years or more of anything, I feel like you would have said it was too slow. So you would have just rather had this split up into like two books and give more detail throughout.
Yeah. Well, except like the length of some of the stuff is fine, but like I said, like the yada yada of like 2 years and then straight into war. Like some like the length of the segments were okay, but it just didn't really blend it super well for like my liking.
Yeah, I can't really like disagree with anything you said there, Zach, but the pacing, it didn't bother me. I don't know if I was just like really into the story, so I wasn't as worried about what the pacing was, but it kept me coming, you know? Like, that's the one thing that I really liked about it, is that I did want to keep reading it and I wanted to keep going. And so, I mean, it all just kind of worked for me, I guess.
Yeah, I'm more leaning towards Chris. I mean, I would have definitely liked more details in there, but it gave us enough to get to the next part. You know, it gave us enough to understand what was happening. It gave us enough to understand the world. So I loved it. And it was constantly kept me intrigued and engaged with what the author was trying to say. So yeah. I really liked the pacing of it.
I think the author really wanted to get to, like, the author's like, look, first book, we got to get to this genocide, you know, so we're going to have to like go fast through a couple things, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And like, I don't need it to be long. Like, she can like cut more stuff out. It was just felt like whiplash bouncing between things going on. You know, you could even make it short. I don't even necessarily need the school stuff to be longer, but it just seemed very super like abrupt, kind of what she chose to stop talking about and pivot to something different.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. All right, you guys want to hit some of these other questions?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I can hit this first one here. So, I mean, obviously, like, most of fantasy is very like Eurocentric that we like generally read, and we did so far like read Shadow of the Gods and Hunger, and that was pretty like Nordic inspired, you'd think, right? Is that kind of where it's from?
Yeah,
this one here is very much inspiration from East Asian like history and then also like cultural stories. Is there like another culture you guys would like to explore, like fantasy book wise, or another part of the world?
That's a tough question.
I would say I don't know if there's I'd love to read some like African fantasy or if there's something like that.
Yeah, we were just talking about Red Wolf, Black Panther. That's one we're going to touch on then. It's a fantasy book based in Africa. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like African inspired.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like some like Latin America ones too, I think would be pretty interesting to hit.
Yeah. That's an interesting. We really never see Spanish, Mexican, Latin American culture in stories, really. And if it is in stories, it's usually not great. Like, it's not representative exactly. So
yeah,
I think I agree with that. I would love to see like a South American fantasy novel or something.
Yeah, I think those would all be good. Okay, who is the most bland main character?
I love
between
this.
Rin, Darrow, and Katniss Everdeen.
Ooh. I would. I mean, personally,
in my opinion, they're all pretty bad. They're all pretty vanilla, no personality.
I think it's Katniss for me.
Yeah. She. Go ahead, Chris. Give your reasoning.
Well, I don't know. Katniss is just, I don't know. She's kind of lame. I don't know. She's just, what's she got going for her? I don't know.
It's just two dudes interested in her.
She's Katniss. Or me. Katniss was always defined by the people around her, whether it be like Prim, the two guys. Like, she was Gale. Only interested. Gale, and the other short guy. And so she was only like ever defined by like the people around her or how they like drove her story forward. She never really like made autonomous decisions. So I didn't love that. What about you, Zach? What are your thoughts? You wrote the question.
And like I said, I think they're all pretty bad. Yeah, I kind of agree with Katniss, but also like Darrow. I think he can be a pretty boring main character for me. I think Rin had potential, but then I think she just... I had no idea what the fuck she was like thinking or doing or why she was doing stuff in that second half.
Rin's so impulsive. She keeps things interesting. It just doesn't really make sense why she's doing the interesting things, but yeah
it's probably Katniss.
Other side of things, let's do a fuck, marry, kill between Jiang, Alton, and Niza. All
right. I think you got to marry Jiang.
Why?
And then I'd probably kill Alton.
You're gonna fuck. All right. Okay, we're going to have different opinions on this. Give us your reasoning.
Yeah.
Well, Jiang, I mean, he seems like a fun guy to hang out with. So, seems like a good life. And then
you're gonna be in The Rock.
Alton's very volatile. You know, he might.
You're
literally
living. You're gonna be living in a volcano.
You just married a rock man,
Chris. Yeah, you're gonna be like sitting there while he's meditating.
No, it's
well, shit. I'll be fine.
It's Jiang, not in The Rock. We're going with that.
Right. Yeah. He's out of The Rock. He's out of The Rock.
I'm going to fuck the hell out of Jiang. That's going to be a wild time. We're going to do some DMT and take off together. I'm going to marry Niza, get status. I'm the son-in-law of a warlord now. And I'm going to fuck Alton. Or wait. Yeah. I'm going to also fuck Alton. Can I do that? No, all right, fine. We'll kill Alton.
Yeah, kill Alton.
Kill Alton, I wouldn't want any trident play.
That's what they call him in bed, is the trident.
Yeah.
What about you, Zach?
I have the same answer as you, Brandon. That's like my order too. Because I feel like you can be with Zhang and he can get you there without even like needing to like touch you. He'll like tell you a new way to like meditate and you'll be fine.
Yes, you guys convinced me. That is the correct answer.
Yeah, we could like do the deed without even like touching each other. So I think I'd be down with that. And then yeah, like you said, status if you marry him, and then Alton's just way too like volatile. I wouldn't want to be married to him and worry about him at war, or if I had to like spend the night with him, I'd be like afraid.
Yeah, he's kind of just a general bummer. Like he just doesn't smile. He's really good at fighting. I don't know. He's probably like ripped as hell though. So that's something to consider. But
yeah,
Jiang is going to be like loose and flabby. I imagine he's fat. I don't know. all right. I think that's all the questions we have. Unless you want to talk about how the hell does Jiang have a job at the academy. But, you know, that's kind of just, I don't know.
He almost lost it a couple times, right? Yeah. That one like Snape like professor, didn't he like try to vote him out a couple times?
Oh, June. Yeah, he was
something like that. Yeah.
Constantly trying to get him out. But I just the whole time I was like, who is paying for this guy's salary? He just grows drugs and goes on backpacking trips, but it's a good life.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's just move on from that. Do you guys have any predictions, hot takes for the next book?
I thought Niza is going to be the one that betrayed her, but no. I think I got my facts wrong on that. Niza's not dead. He's definitely coming back.
He's definitely not dead.
Yeah, I think Niza's coming back too. My only hot take is that I don't know if I want to read another one of these books just because it's a bit of a downer. But, you know, that's my hot take.
I already have the next one bought. I cannot fucking wait to read this book, this next one. I'm like pins and needles for this.
I'm kind of in the middle. I'll put the little hold on Libby, and if it's 12 weeks, then I can wait 12 weeks.
Well, my hot take is that the Empress is, or the Vipress, I guess, is going to turn out to be justified in all the things she did, and she's going to help her and Rin are going to work together. That's what I see coming after their confrontation. So.
I think there's definitely something special about her, whoever her parents are, because they've done a couple. Why am I the only survivor? So there's definitely some parentage stuff there.
Yeah. It's tough to predict on this because I feel like just anything could happen in this next book and I wouldn't be surprised. So,
yeah.
Do you want to hit MVP, LVP?
I feel like they're all losers. Like, to be honest, like.
Yeah, no one won this book. That's
Like there's so much death and destruction. Like no one can feel good. Or I guess maybe the dragon god. He won.
Or the Phoenix?
Or the Phoenix, excuse me. Yeah, the Phoenix.
Yeah. The Phoenix definitely won. Ah, that's a good point. They're a good big MVP.
You could say Alton won because he wanted to like die and die heroically, and he took down the the people who imprisoned him and took down the experimental lab, but that's like a stretch.
Yeah.
I was going to say Alton is like the LVP of this book because he just, his life was the worst. I mean,
yeah.
Besides, you know, a couple victories in there, he had a tough go of it. So, Chris, you have LVP, MVP?
Yes, I would say my LVP is Jang because, I mean, he literally just gave up on life. He essentially killed himself. So he's just like, man, I suck. And he's like, I'm just going to go chill. So he's the LVP. And then MVP, I guess the Empress pretty much seemed like she got what she wanted, I guess. I don't know. So
it's interesting that you see Jiang as giving up. I thought of it as like, I'm just not going to be part of this like bullshit that you guys are part of. So find me once you're done with this stupid shit. And
but isn't that annoying? That's his whole point of life is to like deal with that bullshit. Like yeah, now is a moment that all this training and he's like, nah, I'm just going to like let you two crazy kids deal with the thing that I've been like literally training my entire life for. Tell me when you destroy the world and I'll come back.
He's 0-2 right now. He's tried two students. He's trying to teach him the right way. Both of them fucked up and went to the Phoenix. He's not good at what he does.
No.
He needs a new curriculum for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another winner is what's her name or Rin's stepmom, evil stepmom. I liked her. She had like a cool operation going. She's like making money on the side. She now doesn't have to deal with
the. You like the drug dealing abuser? That was the character that you're like, there
you go. She set Ren up nice. She's like, Ren, I'm marrying you off to this rich ass guy, pop out one kid, poison him, and then you're rich for life. You're welcome.
All right.
And Ren was like,
I love this. I love this.
Ren was like, nah, I'm going to go study. And she's like, fine, you can study, but you can't study on like work hours. I don't know. I wanted more of her.
The evil stepmom.
We might get it. We might get it.
You've convinced me. She's great.
That town wasn't affected, right?
No, that
from any like
gone.
The wars and attacks, right? They're all still cool.
It got drowned by the dam breaking, right? Yeah.
So the stepmom is dead, potentially.
Because wasn't she mourning her like stepbrother or whatever? Thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought she was like,
there's so much loss and damage. It's hard to keep up like who's dead and who's not.
Yeah.
Well, the world population went from a lot to like 15 people now, basically. So we'll see how that shapes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think
killed a lot of people.
Yeah. Very quickly too. Good for her. I think that's all we have today. We'll at some point, I assume, cover the next book too. But thanks everyone for listening. And if you haven't already, follow us on Spotify, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. We're posting, doing our thing. On off weeks, we're doing our fantasy news. So don't miss the side quests. But thanks again for listening. We love you all. And once again, we're the Knights of the Hardcover.